Welcome to Bringing Out the Best of Ourselves, a series of shows exploring how we can grow stronger individually and as a community. I am Marcia Hyatt, inviting you to join in our exploration of how we build partnerships in our community. What is a partnership and how do we strengthen them? To do that, I've interviewed Barry Oshry, a distinguished educator and a pioneer in the field of human systems thinking, and I've asked Bob Carter to join me in the studio. Thanks for being here, Bob.
Well, thanks for asking me, Marcia. I'm happy to be here.
And why did you agree to do this?
Well, one of the advantages, I think, of living in a small community, as we do, is that you get a real an opportunity to do hands-on partnership building, if you're willing to. And what has been interesting is how we sometimes stumble over one another in an effort to improve a community that we care passionately about.
Yeah. And you also have been introduced to Barry's work.
I have. I participated, along with you and four other people from our community, in doing a play called What a Way to Make a Living, which Barry wrote, and that we performed in a number of different locations about what we're going to be talking about today, tops, middles, and bottoms, and how you play those roles.
Great. And we're going to look at Barry's Oshry's framework around that, and particularly how do you understand human systems, patterns that repeat, and how does that help us build partnerships? Barry defines partnership as a relationship in which you're jointly committed to whatever process, project, or endeavor you're in. Jointly committed, you don't necessarily have to agree on everything, but you have that stand. And Barry has a unique lens on this, based on his observation over the past 50-plus years. So a little bit about his story and how he came to his theories about top, middles, and bottoms. Barry received his PhD from Boston University, where he later taught, and was chairman of the Department of Organizational Studies. He was your typical college professor until the 60s, he was introduced to experiential education. Basically, if you want to learn about groups, create one and see what happens. For Barry, he started creating organizational experiences for his students. And as he ran these exercises in his classroom, he began to notice patterns. He had totally different people in the top role, but they'd use the same descriptors to describe that space. He'd have very, very different people in the bottom role, the frontline producer worker role. And again, different people would describe the experience similarly. Well, his observations solidified when, in 1969, the National Training Lab asked Barry and other colleagues, including Betty Friedan, the late American feminist, to create an experiential exercise around power. This became known as the Power Lab. This exercise is a 24-hour-a-day workshop for a number of days on end. And when it was originally created, it was an exercise that had the haves and the have-nots.
Over time, the Power Lab evolved into this three-tier system. Was called the elite or the tops, so immigrants at the bottom and the middles in the middle, and with very sharp differences in wealth and power. So, for instance, when understand, these are basically executives, managers, educators, and consultants who are coming to this program to learn about power. They're here to learn. So now, when the folks come in as immigrants, they essentially just about everything is taken away from them. They come in with a change of clothing and medication, and that's it. And so they have no money, they have no food, they have no place to live, and the only way they're going to survive now in here is that they will have to sign up for work in the elite institutions, make some money, have to make some decisions about how to spend it, how much can I spend on rent, how much can I spend on food, how much can I spend on in various items. So that's them at one end. At the other end, you have the elite. And so now the elite have everything. They control all of the society's resources. They have all of the society's funds. They own all the society's housing, the food supply. Nobody eats except in the institutions of the elite by paying for their meals. The elite control the judicial system, the cultural system, the labor system, all of that. And in between the elite, these tops and immigrant bottoms, then come the middles, the managers. And the managers are set up where they enjoy a reasonably good quality of life. They have nice housing and they have a reasonably good salary, but all of which depends upon their managing the elite institutions to the satisfaction of the elite. So in that sense, you have a reasonably good existence so long as you told the lie. And so that's the setup. So I often think, God knows what somebody smarter than me could have made out of all of this. But you'd say time after time after time, you would notice the patterns that would develop among the tops, among the middles, and among the bottoms, among the elite, among the managers, and among the bottoms. Some very stark differences within groups. For instance, the bottom groups would develop a very powerful sense of we-ness, a closeness to one another, support, sharing resources with one another, being very sensitive about going off on one's own, being very committed to the collective. Their experience was fundamentally different from the middles. The middles would be totally alienated from one another, unconnected, no sense of team, no sense of groupness. If anything, they'd be competitive with one another, not particularly supportive of one another. And then at the top, there was a vulnerability around, sort of territorial, because the top world was divided up into different domains of power. Who ran the court? Who ran the food and housing? Who ran the cultural institutions? Who ran labor? And so it was divided up among four tops. And there could be issues of one top stepping on the toes of another top. And so they would quickly develop this sort of mine mentality. My area, and it's important, and I would be resisting incursions, interference by other tops into my territory. So you have three very different kinds of interpersonal relationships going on in there that were independent of who the players were. When you're there on the ground having these experiences, whatever is going on, how you feel about yourself and how you feel about others feels very specific to who those people are and to who you are and to this particular situation. You are not seeing yourself as being involved in some pattern that occurs with great regularity from time to time. On the outside, I could see the pattern. I could begin to see over time how that territoriality develops with great regularity among tops, how that we-ness and conformity develops with great regularity in the bottom, how that alienation develops with great regularity in the middle. And so then the challenge would get to be, okay, how do we now help people see the patterns that they're involved in?
And how does that serve them if they see the pattern, if they see that maybe...
Well, here's the thing, because you can now do something about it. For example, let's take the top place. If I am deeply involved in this territoriality, the issues that I'm facing now with you feel very personal to me. I see you as over-controlling, or I see you as weak. Whatever that observation of you seems to be specific about the situation you're in. The fundamental thing is that what we see is not all there is. That would be, if there was just one basic principle, I would start that way. What we see is not all there is. That, the notion that how I see you now is a function of the specific relationship that we are in now. And if we were to change that relationship, I would experience you very differently.
You're listening to The Best of Ourselves. I am Marcia Hyatt, and I'm talking with Barry Oshry, a leading thinker in human systems theory. And our question is, how do we build partnership in our community? Well, I can relate to what Barry was just talking about, because I was in the Power Lab, and I started out as an elite or a top. And by midweek, I was in such turf wars with one of the other tops. I just thought this was the most... an evil, maybe too strong of a word, but certainly not anyone I would want to hang with. And and it felt really personal. It felt like who he was. And then at some point during the week, we switched roles. And he and I were now immigrants, bottoms. And all of a sudden,
we were buds. Mm. All of a sudden, he didn't look so bad.
Right. How the roles that we're in changes how we experience one another.
Yes. Yeah. And it feels like, no, that guy is really wrong. He's really evil. He's really bad. He's got bad intent.
That pattern is always to compare and, I think, mistrust.
Well, what happens, it's not like you all of a sudden become a clueless or competitive person when you move into the top space. You're in a space of complexity and responsibility, mm-hmm. and you adapt. Mm-hmm. You adapt. And we do this in our marriages. And,
sure.
And like, okay, you take the garbage, and I'll take the cooking, the groceries. And you take this, and I'll take that. But then after a while, we don't see what each other's dealing with. And so that's a logical adaptation in the top space, but it can break us apart because we get into a sort of a mind mentality and don't see each other's contribution.
Well, I remember when we did the play around this that we talked a lot about silos, and that was the thing of these individual areas that we were in. Whereas your experience again with this fellow when you were bottoms was that in order to get just the basic necessities, you had to be in a spirit of cooperation.
Right.
You had to work together.
Right.
And I think what's key here is what Barry talked about is these patterns that exist, and they exist throughout and across schools, families, businesses, government,
community
whatever.
Government, right.
And that we don't see them. We just don't see the patterns. We feel that the way we're doing it is the way you do it. And it's becoming aware of those. You can't change them until you become aware of
exactly.
them. And the awareness is really, I think, the challenge.
It is. It's just like a bad habit. If you're not aware of a bad habit, you keep repeating it. When you're aware of it, then it's like, oh my gosh, I can change this now.
Right.
And that's what Barry's trying to make happen with systems thinking. If we say, okay, am I in a bottom space right now? Are we in a we mentality? I mean, think of the United States. September 11th, after the horrible mm-hmm. terrorist attack, mm-hmm. we became strong patriots, which is when there's a strong them, you become a we. It's a way you have strength, as you said. But what happens is then we become intolerant of diversity of thought.
Right.
Because you want us to keep the we strong.
If you're not with us, you're against us.
Right, which can happen in all kinds of ways, in unions and other activist groups that are like the Tea Party, or if you're like, you're one of us or you're not one of us.
Yeah, and I think even into families,
yes.
The same thing happens. And again, I think that becoming aware of the patterns that are there and then being able to see that how you can change it and what will happen if you change it becomes a challenge.
Yes.
Because so many of us think we're doing things differently and we're not. We're really doing them the same way over and over and over.
What I love about Barry's work is that if you could just start with seeing that it might not be personal, that it might be a pattern that repeats or systems.
Mm-hmm.
If you think, okay, so thinking back to my Power Lab experience, it might not be personal about that guy. We might be just doing the best we can to navigate the space that we're in. And that opens me up to being in dialogue with somebody where otherwise I might have written them off.
Yeah. And I think that happens perhaps most, in my impression, the most very, very clearly is with the metals, where they really are a function of the system that they're in.
Yeah.
And interpersonal cooperation almost becomes impossible, not because they're bad people. It's the function of the system.
They're pulled apart.
Yeah, absolutely.
And because they're pulled apart, they stay apart.
Yeah.
And they get into an I mentality, and that can lead to competitiveness and lack of connection, all that kind of stuff. Yeah, I know when I moved into middle management from being a frontline contributor, I thought, gosh, I went from being effective to being totally unable to please anybody.
Right,
what
right.
is going on here?
Yep.
And again, we're not just talking about positions when we say middle. I mean, you could be like a county commissioner who's can be top, but sometimes you could be in the middle between a citizen and a county employee.
Sure.
So
department
it's,
manager.
Right. So mm-hmm. it can really, it's not just a position. It's also a space that we move in and out of.
What happens with middles became so clear to me, although I didn't identify it till later on when I understood the lab, I came out of the automobile business, and we used to take, consistently, we'd take our best salesman and make him a manager. And we wound up with, we lost the good salesman and we had a lousy manager. A, because we never gave him enough help, but just putting them in, and this best salesman always wanted to be a manager, and yet it was the fastest way out the door that anybody, because it was a system that just would not allow success.
It's very hard to navigate that space between the tops and the bottoms. Yep. Very, very hard. And we think it's personal. It's like, wow, how they get so ineffective all of a sudden, as opposed to they're navigating a different space.
And from a top standpoint, from the management standpoint, consistently we used to say, whatever happened to Joe? He was such a great salesman.
Yeah.
How did he become such a lousy employee?
Yeah.
Pretty easy.
The middle space can pull you down.
In community and in all over, it's not just top, middle, and bottom. It is certain kinds of relationships that we're in. So, for instance, whether you're talking about community, family, or organization, we've identified three kinds of systemic relationships we're always moving in and out of all the time. We call it top-bottom relationship, where top has designated responsibility for something and bottom is a member in that. Now, again, that could be organizationally, where, you know, I'm the supervisor and you're the worker in the group, but you can take it all the way to the government. The president is the top of designated responsibility for the country, and I'm the citizen in the country. You can take it into the local community, where I'm a member and somebody else is top, and we're at this top-bottom relationship. The thing about that is, what's universal there is when we begin to see, even in community life, if we become aware that we're constantly moving in and out of a number of relationships, or just they were top-bottom, then it's important for me to notice what happens to us in that relationship. For instance, what we find is with great regularity, whenever there's a top-bottom relationship, not always, not every time, but with great regularity, what happens is responsibility tends to rest with top and not bottom. So now, bottom feels not responsible. Top is responsible. So say it's president and citizen. Great. And the country's just going terrific. And so we're not in partnership at all now. Not at all. Because I'm not responsible. President is responsible. Things are going just terrific, so no problem here. Now, what happens when the things begin to go sour? The economy runs down. We start to run into problems internationally and all of that. I'm still not responsible. President is responsible. So now I'm feeling like, oh, man, how did I get stuck with this bad situation? You know, and this president has really screwed things up and making a mess out of all of this. And now I'm upset at the president, and I want to get rid of the president. I want to impeach the president. And I'm absolutely feeling blameless about all of this. And the poor president is feeling, oh, my God, I am responsible and all of that. So now, that little scenario, I can take that to the city, to the community, to a project team, to a neighborhood. We're constantly moving into that top-bottom relationship. If we see it, then we have some choice around it, because that means, oh, I know what's going on. I see what's happening. I'm holding them responsible and not myself. I could begin to shift that. I could begin to say, okay, what's my part in this? How can I assume more responsibility for the situation that we're in? That's the difference between, in the first case, we're blind to it and it just happens to us. In the second case, when we recognize the pattern, then we can shift it. We can do something. We have the choice to be able to do that.
Well, as a bottom, when you, top bottom, okay, so you say the president, a citizen. Well, isn't it true that it's not my fault? I mean, they're in charge, right? So maybe I am blameless.
The issue is, given the situation as it exists now, you may be blameless. Given the situation that it exists now, the question is, what is your part in dealing with that situation now? Now, it doesn't, I mean, sure, maybe they screwed up. So now your choice is to say, okay, they are responsible for fixing this and I am not. Or to say, what part can I play now in changing the situation? Now, that may mean, you know, things that I can do by myself. That may mean serious organizing that I may need to do with others. That may need more strategizing about how I can make change happen. You know, we see that happen. We see that happen regularly in social life, where apparently powerless people, things like MoveOn.org, change.org, where people who normally do not have much power find ways by accepting responsibility for the conditions that they're in. That doesn't mean that they are wholly responsible. It means, what's my part in keeping the situation as it is or in changing it?
One of the issues that I see is that people stay back in that it's not my fault that they're doing it, and then it becomes an attack on the leadership because they didn't do it the way I thought it should have been done. You know, it didn't do it right. Mm-hmm. And so it's so easy to like shoot arrows or attack somebody who's trying to make something happen. How do you stop that from happening? How do you create more of a partnership?
That's a very tough situation. You know, what is my notion about that? It's that what we're really doing is looking for a cultural change in how we experience these relationships. Some of this stuff sounds so fundamental, but for instance, the case you're taking now, the situation that you're taking now, you try to create something, and what is it, resistance to it, or is that what we're talking about?
Attacks, like what are you doing, why are you doing this to me, who, what's going on, even though there might have been an opportunity to have a voice in it earlier, now that it's actually happening, it can get quite harsh and quite judgmental, and it's really easy to sling arrows at people who are initiating or trying to lead something.
Mm. Yes.
And that's not partnership. I mean, in some ways, it was what you were saying earlier, which is the bottoms find their voice for the condition they're in. It's like, okay, I got to stop these people from making this new initiative happen, which, you know, it's great. They found their voice, and they're taking some responsibility. But is there a way to go back?
Well, Paul, let's see. It's interesting because this situation that you're describing, well, we don't know who the good guys and bad guys are in this operation. I mean, part of the whole, and I'm using it facetiously, but it may very well be that the finding the voice down there is an important voice that has to be heard. There is some legitimacy in what the issue, in what the resistance is all about. So the question is it just resistance because we're changing some pattern that I'm familiar with, and this is the way we do things, and just leave me alone, and it's not great, but it's the world I know, or is it that that you who are initiating this thing have to do some deeper thinking about what it is you're trying to do and what it is you're trying to make happen? Because if I would get to the fundamental part of it, would be again that there's a general, what I really would like to see happen is a huge cultural shift in the sense that a shift from blindness to sight. It would not be so unusual for people to turn around and say, look, I see what's going on here. Now we're in one of these top-bottom interactions. This is the pattern that we're falling into right now. And so let's take a look at how we can work together to change that pattern. Now, notice the difference of what we're saying here is, how do we work together to change that pattern, as opposed to when somebody is shooting arrows, there's nobody working together to change any pattern. It's more attack and defend, or attack on the other side and defend. And the whole power of seeing these systemic relationships is that once we recognize it, it gets to be something that we work together to shift. So, in the situation that you're talking about now, there's some very important conversation that has to go on between the initiator and the recipient about what's wrong and how can we work together to make something happen.
You're listening to The Best of Ourselves. I am Marcia Hyatt, and I'm talking with Barry Oshry, a leading thinker in human systems theory. And our question is, how do we build partnership in our community? So he's talking about, president and citizen, but of course that's relevant at the local level or in a small company. It could be the boss and the employee. It could be government official in the county or the city.
Yep. Could be a father and a child.
It sure could. And and the pattern where the responsibility tends to go to the top role. And it's really easy when I'm in that place where I'm in the bottom role or recipient of decisions others made, it's really easy to go to, what clueless people they are to be the victim.
Yeah. And that's what struck me too, Marcia, was particularly, I think if we look at, I was going to say at the national level, but you're absolutely right. It's at any level or any in any system. It is so easy to go to, all of this is being done to me. I have no responsibility. I have no power in this. I have no voice in this. It's all being done to me. And then, and get stuck there. And get stuck as a victim and feel voiceless, powerless, that I can't possibly change this.
And this, and so say you are idealistic and you want to take a partnership stand, and then as he suggested that the initiator and the arrow shooters, you know, find a to try to sit around the common table. It doesn't mean that the others are going to have the same stand to be jointly committed to the success of whatever endeavor we're in.
No, and again, I think it has a lot to do with what Barry spoke about before, was being aware of the patterns that are there and choosing, after you're aware, to do something about it. There is the possibility that that a person in this is not going to want to be in partnership.
In partnership.
And that, what do we do then?
Well, you know, this is where I love, you know, Brené Brown, who's written The Gifts of Imperfection and her new book, Daring Greatly, which cites this really powerful quote from Teddy Roosevelt that is from a speech he gave in 1910. The quote is entitled The Man in the Arena. Quote, "It is not the critic who counts, not the man who points out how the strong man stumbles or where the doer of deeds could have done them better. The credit belongs to the man who is actually in the arena." Unquote. That's the Teddy Roosevelt, 1910. And the thing that Brené Brown said that was pivotal for her as she put out her work on shame and vulnerability and was attacked, as it happens quite regularly for public figures. As she was being attacked and she ran across this quote, and she said, "You know what? That's it. Criticism is fine. But if you're not willing to get into the arena with me to help make something happen that for whatever higher order goal we can both agree to, then if you're just going to shoot arrows, I'm not going to give that energy. I'm not going to pay attention to that. I am going to focus on the folks who want to work with me to make things better." And it doesn't mean you agree with me. It just means that you're in the arena too. You're listening to Bringing Out the Best of Ourselves. I am Marcia Hyatt, and joining me in the studio is Bob Carter. We're exploring how to apply the work of Barry Oshry to build partnership in our community.
To me, partnership is a subset of relationship. We're in lots of relationships which are not partnerships. So partnership is a relationship in which we are jointly committed to the success of whatever venture or process or project that we're engaged in. Are we jointly committed to its success? So even in the situation that you're talking about there, where there is this arrow shooting and back and forth, there has to be a fundamental question here about whatever is going on here, whatever the issue is, whatever we're disagreeing on, are we jointly committed to the successful outcome of this?
Mm-hmm.
And if we're not, then then it's then the option is what? It's war. But it's not about work, not partnership. But if we are jointly committed, then we work on how we're going to get at that.
And you may have to go back a few steps. It may be not on this particular initiative, but it might be on the well-being of our community or the safety of our children, or you know, you might have to back it up to a higher, to a value that you can fundamentally agree on, and then go from there.
And you have, from when you're talking about community issues, you have some very difficult issues with very sharply disagreeing positions, all based in valid issues about how you deal with water, how you deal with lumber, how you deal with this, based on. So these are not like easy, oh, let's just get to some agreement around this. But the question is, are we jointly committed to a successful outcome of this situation that we're in?
And you're saying that if we can see the context, see where we might have abdicated responsibility or taken all the responsibility and not cultivated it around us, if we can see that, then we might have more success creating partnership?
Yes, yes. We can do some shifting. Because we've just talked about top-bottom. But let me do another one, which, again, will show up a great deal in community life as well as organizational life. And this is when we talk about this end-middle-end relationship. As we often, most of us understand what it is to be in the middle between above and below, or between a parent cop, between a child and the other parent. So we know what it is to be in the middle. But when we're looking at this, we're talking about who are the ends in this relationship? Who are the people on both sides of the middle? Each of them has got their own agendas and priorities and things that they want middle to do. And again, one of the things that we've noted here with great regularity is that in that relationship, this end, middle, end relationship, that responsibility tends to rest with middle and not with end. So now when issues come up, it's crystal clear to middle that I'm now responsible for resolving their issues. And they are crystal clear that middle is responsible. Everybody's in agreement that middle is responsible for resolving whatever's going on here. Now, the issue is, if you've got a really, dynamite middle is running around and is just effective and doing this and doing that, and then there's no problem. We're out of partnership, but things are okay. But as soon as middle begins to flag, now what we have is, here is middle feeling weak, incompetent, letting people down, not getting positive feedback, and here are these two ends figuring, God, what is the matter? Why do I have this? Why am I stuck with this weak, ineffective middle? And notice again what's happening. All of that, when that's gone on, feels absolutely like reality. Nobody sees them having fallen into any pattern here. All these ends know is they're okay, and poor them that they've got this weak, ineffective middle. And all middle knows is, poor me, I'm sorry that I used to be strong, but I'm not anymore. Do you see the difference between being blind and seeing? It is amazing. Being blind, it all feels specific, personal, just you. Seeing, he says, wait a minute. What's going on here is this familiar pattern that we're in. And recognizing that, we begin to shift. How do you shift? Now middle says, just a second, I'm not wholly responsible for this. I'm going to find some ways to get these ends more involved in the solution of their own issues. And end could get more awareness here and says, oh, I see what's going on here. I got to get more involved in dealing with this. So in some sense, this is such simple stuff. These little fundamental relationships, they're so simple, yet when we're blind to them, we just regularly run off into these dysfunctional scenarios for ourselves and for others and for our systems. If you take any one of these things, this top-bottom one, just to give you an example. So the reflex is top sucks up responsibility, bottom doesn't. Okay, great. Now what happens long-term? Top is now living in a much more complex world than top has to be in, is handling more things than top has to handle. Now something comes along and top now really needs bottom, but top for years has trained bottom to be irresponsible and now expects bottom to turn around and be responsible. I mean, these are things that on the simple choice have such long-term major consequences, not just for relationships, but for the functioning of systems.
Right. So you see it. There's some freedom with that. You're perhaps trapped by something that's almost invisible if you don't understand the context and these patterns that happen. And you see it, you've got some leverage. But what I also hear you saying is, and it might take a while to really experience anything different because we've perhaps hardened into these powerless,
right.
Powerful
right.
roles.
Right. The longer we've hardened into it, the more difficult it's going to be to shift. We talk about shifting the dance. We've been in that relationship for such a long period of time, and now it is like dancing. One party says, holy cow, I've got this epiphany. I understand what's been going on now. Now I want to take more responsibility in this relationship. Well, the other partner in the dance has been used to going the way they've been going, and they're not in such a rush to shift anymore.
You might step on your toes. Yes.
They might step on your toes. They want to do the old dance. You're trying to do the new dance. And so you run into this place where, you know, regularly feeling, oh, well, wait, maybe I made a mistake. Why don't I just forget about it and just let's go back to the way things have been. It's not perfect, but we're used to it, and I don't upset them, and all right, we'll go with that. Or else you may say, you know, something, I don't like this relationship. I don't like it. They don't want to change. I'm getting out of it. I'm not going to get, I'm leaving this relationship is another way. Well, the other was you said, which would can take some time and some sensitivity over time to begin to work on how do we actually shift this? How do we help the other party see what are the payoffs for us and for the system if we shift this relationship? What's the new vision of what could be if we begin to operate differently in this relationship?
Well, it goes back to your definition of partnership. So if you're jointly committed, if you can keep going back to that touchstone, again, whether it's the well-being of the community, economic vitality, safety of our children, if you could go back to that, you can start having a different kind of conversation. You're listening to Bringing Out the Best of Ourselves. I am Marcia Hyatt, and joining me in the studio is Bob Carter. We're exploring how to apply the work of Barry Oshry to build partnership in our community.
You know, what struck me there, Marcia, particularly when he's talking about the dance, is that I think sometimes, at least on the surface, we think, okay, we have the motivation for change. I remember working at a dealership. I was a manager at a dealership, and actually the owner was, I thought, pretty progressive. And we went through some training through Ford Motor Company that was literally about transforming the culture of a dealership. And the basis of it was that various groups were formed within the dealership that incorporated all the different levels, tops, middles, bottoms, to use Barry's things, small groups that worked on various policies, procedures, mission, direction, all of the rest of it, and were at least theoretically empowered by the dealer himself to proceed and to make change. And unfortunately what happens, and as I say, this particular guy was, I thought, pretty progressive, but as the change got, or what people were recommending or what they were trying to become became uncomfortable for him, he just basically kind of went his own way anyway. So before too long, everybody that was in these various groups thought, what are we doing? I mean,
is this for real?
He's just doing it anyway. And what happened was it got so uncomfortable. I think everybody, particularly the dealer, thought we're just going back to the way it was before.
Yeah.
Because we know that works.
Yeah.
Now it may not work well.
Right.
You know, it
right.
might be, but it works and people know where they fit and there's a certain comfort level. And it was a classic example, I thought, of some possibility for change, but it just was too uncomfortable.
And that discomfort is a critical part of the change process. You don't just like change a dance. Even think about your individually changing a behavior. You don't just change a behavior. There's this messy, icky part. And that's where a lot of folks say, it can't happen. It's not for real.
Yeah.
Why put our energy here? Let's just do what we've always done.
They can't get through the discomfort, and at times it's more than discomfort,
right,
of the change to see how good it can be on the other side of the change.
And the thing about the change, I mean, the whole notion about partnership, that we're bottoms, tops, using that grouping,
mm-hmm.
Where bottoms have more of a voice and have more sense of agency, there is a huge amount of evidence that that makes your system, whether you're talking a community or an organization, stronger,
absolutely,
more robust. It's not like just a nice thing to do to give people a voice. It actually strengthens your ability to just navigate whatever turbulence you're going to encounter.
Absolutely. The key being the voice has to be allowed to be expressed.
It's both end.
Yeah.
It's both end. And
yeah.
And there'll be that really messy part. In Barry's book, Seeing Systems, Unlocking the Mysteries of Organizational Life, there's a poem that he wrote that I used to tear up when I read this poem because it's so powerful to me. The poem is called The Sound of the Old Dance Shaking. I won't read the whole poem, but let me read the end of it. Can we change the dance? Maybe. Maybe not. Maybe we'll go on dancing to the end of our days, not seeing one another, not loving one another, misunderstanding, hurting, and destroying one another. Or maybe we will see the dance. Maybe we will stop the dance. and maybe we will create a new dance. But first, there will be the sound of the old dance shaking.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're talking about, like your dealership. Like that's that messy part.
Yep.
And it's not like this guy's a bad guy. It's like when you have a pattern of leadership where it's like, my job is to take care of everybody. He's like, well, I'm just going to take care of them and make it in a way that we're all comfortable.
Absolutely.
And know what it's going
to
be.
And you know, in an automobile, it's similar to many other businesses. The dealer is an entrepreneur. He probably, you know, created the business on his own, and he got to be where he was by being a certain type of person, and it takes another certain type of person to let go of some of that.
And even if he is, again, take the personality out of it, when you're in that top space where you experience overall responsibility, it is a reflexive response to pull responsibility to yourself and subsequently away from everybody else.
Sure.
So you can be a variety of personalities, but you get into that space and it's a pretty predictable way of your response. Like, okay, it's up to me. I got to take care of everything.
Well, it goes right back to what Barry talked about in one of the first cuts we listened to. That pattern is there.
Yeah.
And it will repeat and will repeat and will repeat.
So, for example, if you see the pattern, like in the dealership, mm-hmm. and folks, the frontline employees, seeing that top getting uncomfortable and pulling back, you could also do it from a place of empathy and say, yeah, from a top place, it's got to be really uncomfortable.
Yep.
He may not experience this as being under control. What conversations do we need to have so that we can get back to jointly committed to the success of this dealership again?
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
And
unfortunately, as Barry also said, the tops have done a great job over the years of training their people not to be responsible, not to be responsive.
Right.
And in part, partially to be victims.
That training shows up again and again.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. We are talking with Barry Oshry, author of Seeing Systems and Leading Systems. We're talking to Barry about how to build partnership in community. It seems like you're asking a lot of us as human beings and people if we're going to not fall back on, well, it's not my fault, it's their fault. Look at those tops, look at those leaders, look at those initiators, look what they're doing to us. It's easy to fall into blame. It's easy, and in some ways it feels better than to say, I have a part in this too.
Mm-hmm.
So you're asking a lot of us as human beings.
Yeah. Well, asking a lot and also offering a lot. Because just as you say, when you think about it, I mean, sometimes just talking about it, you lose what some of the juice around this is. If I'm in a situation in which it's clear to me that they have screwed up and poor me, and boy, I get a lot of joy. I get a lot of joy at making fun of them, and not only that, I've got a whole bunch of friends over here, and we get together, and together we make fun of them. And that's just great. And we even have a radio show that we listen to where they make fun of them. And so we're all in that together. And so that's one part. And that's one set of experiences that I have. Now, there's the other set of experiences to say, you know, this situation that I've been whining about, it is possible for me to take a look at what's my part in the perpetuation of this experience I'm complaining about. To what extent does it continue because of things I do or don't do? And what if I were now to take an active part in seeing if I could shift this situation that I've been whining about? Now, what's happening here is a choice about being. There's two ways to be in this situation. That other one, that a lot of fun, that blame, and it's not me, and I'm clear, and it's them, and it's dope. That's one way of being. And this other way of being is where now I have some agency about this situation that we're in. I am now an actor. I'm not at the receiving end of this. I'm an actor in this situation. And now I have to use a whole other set of myself, all of the parts of myself, to make some change here. Now, it's simply a choice. You know, it's simply a choice that what you can do for people is to help them see you can go this way, you can go that way. Ultimately, you're going to make the choice. Which way do you want to be? Which way gives you a deeper satisfaction? Now, clearly, that first one, oh, yeah, you get some satisfaction out of that. And there's a whole other kind of satisfaction that comes from being the agent in your own life.
It's not. And the way you said it's so nice, because you said it in a way that wasn't judgmental. It's just like, okay, there's one way, and it's pretty easily done, and there is satisfaction. And then there's another where you have more agency, have more impact, look at your choices.
You know, the difference is when you blame, you're all done. It's all over. You know, you're blaming where else you go. When you go the other route, you're launching on an adventure for yourself about now, what am I going to do? How am I going to change? What's involved here? I'm using all other parts of my brain, my know-how, my experience, my connections, other people that I could begin to work with around how we shift this. So they just take you down from totally different paths.
And then if you add in what you said earlier, which is sitting down with the others involved with whether they're top, middle, bottom, you know, in your framework, you sit down and hear their story about what they're trying to make happen, what they're up against, it might increase the possibility that we can get together to work on this, as opposed to operating out of blindness to the other folks involved in this. Blindness
right.
of what they're trying to make happen, blindness of their context.
Right. It's whether we just deal with the surface of what we're talking about, you know, the attack and defend, as opposed to really listening to one another's world.
Yeah, and really trying to understand where others are coming from versus assuming negative intent. You are listening to Bringing Out the Best of Ourselves. I am Marcia Hyatt, and joining me in the studio is Bob Carter. We're exploring how to apply the work of Barry Oshry to build partnership in our community.
I'm struck, Marcia, by several things that Barry said there. Number one, which I thought was wonderful, was when you said you're asking us a lot as human beings, and he said, yeah, but I'm offering a lot, too.
He is.
A lot is being offered, too, and I think that's absolutely true. Our good friend Harry Swift used to say that if I'm bothered by something or someone, then I need to look at what's going on with me. I need to look at what's wrong with me at that moment. And I think that for me, is one of the keys to all of this. Barry talked about you can be this way or you can be that way. For me to choose to be this way, I need to look at what's going on with me.
Choose agency, voice versus passivity and blame.
Passivity and blame.
Right.
Because
right.
as he said, if I blame it, now I'm done.
Right. And the other thing about, and I love that, and I agree with Harry's wisdom, you know,
mm-hmm.
that if it's bothering
mm-hmm.
me, there's something here for me that I need to understand. If I'm finding myself blaming, that's then, here's a moment of choice. Here's a moment where I can choose to stay here or say, what's my part? And then this is where Barry said, you know, I offer a lot. I am so much more open to somebody if I think they're doing the best they can in the world they live in.
Absolutely.
It's if I can see, they're in the top space and they're pulling responsibility to themselves or whatever, then I don't take it as personally, and I can be a bit more empathetic and more open to hearing what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
So it's both seeing that choice, but and then it's Barry's framework is saying, most often we got people doing the best they can living in different worlds.
And it's so important, and for some reason so difficult to do. At that point where I am bothered, and I think it's you, it isn't you, it's how I'm reacting. But as you said, that's a moment of choice. And to recognize that, here's
right.
a moment of choice, rather than this jerk. I had that experience over Thanksgiving. We were at Helen's son's house, and her son's father-in-law was there, and he was about as different as I am in every way you can imagine. And I didn't do very well. I was, all afternoon, I was judgmental. I wasn't going to get into it with him, but I was judgmental. And later I thought, he's just doing the best he can. He's just
yeah.
putting one step in front of the other, a foot in front of the other. I may not agree with him on anything, but is there something in there that I can acknowledge as human, and then we could possibly go from there.
Right. And the other, back to Harry Swift's wisdom, and why does it bother me so much that he's choosing to think differently than I do?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's
what was going on with me at that point in time?
Right.
Why
right.
am I restless, irritable, and discontent?
If we could find a way to understand and accept one another. This is where the more we can hear each other's stories, you know, the context. Okay, what is it you're trying to make happen? What's going on? If you tell me your story, I am so much more inclined to understand, respect, appreciate you, even though you still might make really different choices than I do.
And to listen to your story, trying to identify rather than compare.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And we don't always do that very well. I certainly didn't, but they're great, wonderful opportunities if you can recognize it.
There was a play that I did you weren't involved with, but it was similar in Barry Osher's.
You did one without me?
I did one without you. Where I played the boss, and you might find this surprising. I was a very jerky, controlling boss. I pulled from my past history.
I see.
But what was interesting was, as this boss, and the people are trying to make a change in this organization, and I'm playing this role as the boss. Out of hundreds of people that tried to influence me, I think two asked me questions. Most time they try to sell their idea.
Yeah.
But nobody said, so what is it that you care about? What are you trying to make happen? How can we be in partnership around this? Think of the difference. I mean, we often work on advocating our point of view. And what would it be like if we just stopped and say, let me see if I can understand you.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things about how we relate to the other, it's again another one of those awareness and choice things, and that is, how we deal with cultural difference increasingly gets to be my issue, especially now when you see this Sunni Shiite killing and all the Muslim Christian killing and all the rest, and even in everyday life. And so what I'm focusing on is one simple thing, and that is that point in time when we notice the cultural difference of the other, that moment, we didn't have a choice then. And the choice at that time is either we go one way, which is that we evaluate it, we see it as wrong, we see it as off, and we avoid it, we try to control it, keep it from controlling us. Or the other choice is to get interested in it, to wonder about it, to be curious, to observe it, to study it, to learn about it. And I think a lot of our future in the world depends on our ability to do the second as opposed to the first. To just get curious about difference, get interested in it, as opposed to hiding from it, controlling it, dominating it, killing it.
What increases my ability to make the curious choice versus the judgmental choice?
I had this thing this summer, and I'm embarrassed sometimes by my own weakness around things. And I was happening to standing someplace, and we were in Key West, and I noticed this chubby couple coming along, a chubby man, chubby woman. And I found myself very quickly evaluating them. And, you know, and it's like they're funny. And it's that, but what happened is I noticed, but in that moment, all that happened was I noticed that's what I did.
Mm.
And then I was able to do something else.
You saw, yeah. So seeing the choice in the moment is where the power is.
Yeah.
Because if you don't even see the choice,
that's right. And that's everything. That's everything we've been talking about during this whole time. It's either you see it or you don't see it. It's about awareness. And without awareness, there is no choice. With awareness comes choice. And so, you know, in my work, we have focused around awareness around particular items, you know, it's top, bottom, and middle, land, provider, customer, all this other stuff. But also, it's awareness around the difference. And I think that is our big challenge as human beings.
Yeah.
As the Buddha said, wake up.
You're listening to The Best of Ourselves. I am Marcia Hyatt, and I'm talking with Barry Oshry, a leading thinker in human systems theory. And our question is, how do we build partnership in our community? Wake up.
Yeah.
Not a small assignment from Barry at the end of the interview there.
No, unfortunately, or fortunately, I guess, none of what Barry has offered us is a small challenge. I was really struck, Marcia, by your question of Barry about how do we find the ability to do this work, to hold the tension creatively, if you will, because I find it so easy. He talked about the two people, and he was very kind when he said evaluating. For me, it's I go to judgment real quickly, whether it's how they look or act or whatever. And that is the question, is how do I recognize what's going on and then stop and say, aren't I better off by being curious here?
Right. And yet I know, especially when I'm feeling insecure or needing to be right, which is usually a sign that I'm not in my best place, that it's very hard to... Judgment makes me, I'm okay, you're not, I'm fine with that.
I
want to be okay.
Yeah.
And so to open up my heart to someone who's really different and get curious, it's a bit threatening in a way.
It is, because it's really uncomfortable.
It is very uncomfortable.
I remember when I went through the Undoing Racism workshop, and I believe it was John Morin was talking to most of us who were white there, and he said, you need to get comfortable with being uncomfortable. And that's really what has to happen here, I think, because what Barry is talking about, what you're talking about, is recognizing these patterns as patterns and then making a decision to be someplace else on it.
Right. Making a decision to take the stand, to be jointly committed to the success of whatever we're in.
And to allow the dance to shake.
Yeah.
And that's uncomfortable.
It really is.
And yet, otherwise it's the same dance, and otherwise it's the same pattern, and it isn't working.
I feel like we have a lot of folks who are feel differently from each other, but moderate and open to hearing each other's perspectives. But it's scary to open ourselves up to that curious stand.
Well, and part of it, I think, is, and I'm not going down this road very far, but part of it is the fact that for whatever reason, at least nationally and politically, we seem to have become so polarized that it almost is, well, it's easier this way.
Well, you know what Barry Oshry says about that, and Brené Brown and a few others, is saying the more we have uncertainty, the more we have fear.
Mm-hmm.
And the more we have uncertainty and fear, the more we want to feel like we know something solidly. I'm right. You're wrong. And it can lead to that polarization. And that's, it's not that we think differently. It's the demonizing the other that's what makes it impossible for us to be strong communities.
Oh, without a doubt. And the other part of it, I think, is that, again, because of the discomfort, because of the unease that is involved when I decide to open my heart to you and, you know, really be able to communicate, it can happen I think the tendency is to say, we can't change the system. Things are the way they are. The haves have it and the have-nots don't, and always will, or whatever. When in truth, if we start locally and really, really locally, it can be different.
Well, you look at the civil rights movement, you look at apartheid in South Africa, things do change, but they don't change without a commitment or a stand.
Yeah.
And so if we want to be a strong community with diversity of thought, but yet strong around what really matters and what we hold in common, we have to figure out how to take the partnership stand, how to step back and be a bit more empathetic and understanding that maybe people are doing the best they can living in different worlds.
And it doesn't mean that we'll always agree. You know, and I think that's important to recognize that your vision of the community welfare and mine may be different. That doesn't mean that we can't come together to pursue what may look different to both of us or more end up than what we envision, but is in fact good.
Right.
So,
because we have a shared common interest, which is the community in which we live.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you, Bob, for being here today.
Thank you, Marcia. It's been fun.
Thank you. Thank you to Barry Oshry for sharing his time and his thoughts with us, and thanks to Bob Carter for joining me in this exploration. You can read more about this program, Bringing Out the Best of Ourselves, and learn more about Barry Oshry's work on our website at www.wtip.org. This is produced by WTIP with production assistance by Jay Anderson, music by Mike Devevic. Funded in part by the Knight Foundation of the Duluth Superior Area Community Foundation. This is Marcia Hyatt, thanking you for joining us in the exploration of how do we bring out the best of ourselves. Thank you.